Although Coleman, in 1894, wrote specifically about hallucinations in the sane associated with local organic disease of the sensory organs, etc., the impression has long remained, both in the popular mind and among physicians too, that hallucinations mean psychosis, or gross organic disease of the brain. The reluctance to observe the common phenomenon of hallucinations in the sane before the 1970s was perhaps influenced by the fact that there was no theory of how such hallucinations could occur until 1967, when Jerzy Konorski, a Polish neurophysiologist, devoted several pages of his Integrative Activity of the Brain to the physiological basis of hallucinations. Konorski inverted the question, "Why do hallucinations occur?" to, "Why do hallucinations not occur all the time? What constrains them?" He conceived a dynamic system which, he wrote, can generate perceptions, images, and hallucinations. The mechanism producing hallucinations is built into our brains, but it can be thrown into operation only in some exceptional conditions. Konorski brought together evidence, weak in the 1960s, but overwhelming now, that there are not only afferent connections going from the sense organs to the brain, but retro-connections going in the other direction. Such retro-connections may be sparse compared to the afferent connections and may not be activated under normal circumstances. But they provide, Konorski felt, the essential anatomical and physiological means by which hallucinations can be generated. What, then, normally prevents this from happening? The crucial factor, Konorski suggested, is the sensory input from eyes, ears, and other sense organs, which normally inhibits any backflow of activity from the highest parts of the cortex to the periphery. But if there is a critical deficiency of input from the sense organs, this will facilitate a backflow, producing hallucinations physiologically and subjectively indistinguishable from perceptions. There is normally no such reduction of input in conditions of silence or darkness, because off units fire up and produce continuous activity. Konorski's theory provided a simple and beautiful explanation for what soon came to be called release hallucinations associated with deafferentation. Such an explanation now seems obvious, almost tautological, but it required originality and audacity to propose it in the 1960s. There is now good evidence from brain imaging studies to support Konorski's idea. In 2000, Timothy Griffiths published a detailed and pioneering report on the neural basis of musical hallucinations. He was able to show, using PET scans, that musical hallucinations were associated with a widespread activation of the same neural networks that are normally activated during the perception of actual music. In 1995, I received a vivid letter from June B., a charming and creative woman of 70, telling me of her musical hallucinations. This first started last November, when I was visiting my sister and brother-in-law one night. After turning off the TV and preparing to retire, I started hearing Amazing Grace. It was being sung by a choir over and over again. I checked with my sister to see if they had some church service on TV, but they had Monday Night Football or some such. So I went on to the deck, overlooking the water. The music followed me. I looked down on the quiet coastline and the few houses with lights and realized that the music couldn't possibly be coming from anywhere in that area. It had to be in my head. Mrs. B. enclosed her playlist, which included Amazing Grace, the Battle Hymn of the Republic, Beethoven's Ode to Joy, the drinking song from La Traviata, A Tisket, A Tasket, and a really dreary version of We Three Kings of Orient Are. One night, Mrs. B. wrote, I heard a splendidly solemn rendition of Old MacDonald Had a Farm, followed by thunderous applause. At that moment, I decided that, as I was obviously completely bonkers, I'd better have the matter looked into. Mrs. B. described how she had tests for Lyme disease. she had read that this could cause musical hallucinations. Brainstem evoked audiometry, an EEG, and an MRI. During her EEG, she heard the bells of St. Mary's, but nothing abnormal showed. She had no signs of hearing loss. Her musical hallucinations tended to occur during quiet moments, especially when she went to bed. "I can never turn the music on or off, but I can sometimes change the melody. Not to just anything I want to hear, but to something that has already been programmed. Sometimes the songs overlap. I can't stand another minute, so I turn on WQXR and go to sleep by some real music." I asked her later whether she had other simpler hallucinations. "Sometimes just ding-dong, ding-dong," she replied. "The dong a fifth lower than the ding, maddeningly repeated hundreds of times."